Welcome to Portland Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Bridget McCann. My pronouns are she and her. I am the Senior Minister and Spiritual Director here at the Center, and I am so happy to see all of you. And welcome to those who join us in our virtual community space as well. You are a part of us. How did the universe come into being? Where did it all come from? Just a little question we humans have been asking since we had a mind capable of even contemplating such a question. Great thinkers throughout the ages have tried to come up with answers. Greek philosophers dealt with this question, and they called it the question of first principle. First principle being, what is that cause on which everything rests, or how or from where did everything that we can see and sense come into being? Some of those philosophers chose one of the four elements and said, it's water. No, it's air. One even said, no, it's fire. Some others said, no, it's an intelligence. There's a universal intelligence. Still others, it's just the one. There's not many things. Everything we see is just part of the one, and the one simply is. And then came the philosopher Empedocles, who attempted to take all those prior teachings from his philosophical ancestors and put it into one theory. He proposed there is the one, and the one simply is. That one is intelligent. That one chose to divide itself into earth, wind, fire, and water, and it is the intermingling of these four elements that create everything that is, but it's still all part of the one. So that's a philosophical approach, but of course, great spiritual teachers have also addressed this question. We have in the book of Genesis the story of creation that the three Abrahamic religions look to, that being Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, where it is written that God created the heavens and the earth, that then the spirit of God, moved over the waters, and with its word, which is the use of air and implies intelligence, with its word it created in this order light, sky, dry land, also called earth, the seas, vegetation, the sun, moon, and stars, animals of the water and air, then animals of the land, and then finally humans. Book of Genesis doesn't stop there, and the next chapter goes on to give a different theory about the coming about of humans. God formed humans out of the earth, out of the soil, breathed its life into it, and that is when we became living beings. Looking aside from the three Abrahamic religions, we can look to our Hindu friends who add to the four elements the fifth one, ether, space. And for our Hindu friends, it's written in the Upanishads, Brahman is the abiding reality. He is pure knowledge, and he is infinity. Out of Brahman, who is the self, came ether. Out of ether, air. Out of air, fire. Out of fire, water. Out of water, earth. Out of earth, vegetation. Out of vegetation, food. Out of food, man. That sounds a little more mystical to me. But they're not the only ones that took the mystical approach. The Kabbalist, which is the mystical aspect of Judaism, give two different interpretations of the book of Genesis. Some of them say that the book of Genesis represents that the God's essence, the very essence of God, was distilled through air, fire, and water into the earth, which is then used to form human beings. Some other Kabbalists are much more elaborate in their explanation, and they say that En Sof, now En Sof is undifferentiated spirit. Scientists today might call it the quantum field. It's that unmanifested substance or the field of infinite potentiality, and that this En Sof at one point decided it wanted to create from itself, but because it is everywhere all the time, it needed to create a void, so it withdrew into itself, created some empty space. Into that empty space, it sent 10 fragile vessels filled with divine light. That light was so powerful, the vessels burst. The shards of these vessels still had divine light clinging to them, just like oil would cling to the vessel if its clay vessel broke. That divine light was still in the shards. These shards, I told you it was elaborate. These they're not trivial thinkers, these Kabbalists. But then these shards descended into the bottom of that empty space that is the world and were transformed into earth, water, air, and fire. And from that, we get mineral, vegetables, animals, and humans. So all of this philosophical thinking, all this spiritual thinking teaches us that in some way, all of creation and all of life is from those four basic elements of earth, fire, water, and air, and an intelligence. Which is why these four elements have been honored and revered throughout cultures and around the world and throughout the ages as sacred, because they give us life. One example of this is the Inca people of Peru. They referred to the four elements as Mother Earth, Father Sun, Mother Water, and Father Wind. When they built the great city of Machu Picchu, known as the City of Light, Machu Picchu is filled with features that let us know the significance of light in their culture. Everywhere there are these special features that line up just right on certain days, particularly equinoxes and solstices. They carved into the rock a temple of the sun. These same people, the Inca, also built the sacred site of Tapan. Tapan is a site dedicated to nothing more than to honor water. It's a large, multi-tiered park, very well constructed. I can't imagine the manpower, or I should say people power, but this large sacred site that's for no other reason than to honor water. These same people taught and believed that water was the first gift to creation, and that this gift brought with it other gifts. Our emotions, chief among them, love. They also taught that water unites us. Everything that uses, needs, or drinks water is our relative. And if you think about that, that means all life on this planet is our relative. Think how differently we would treat the planet if we believed that. And of course, here on this continent, many Native Americans people taught that water is the first medicine. And many of those same people build sweat lodges that represent the womb of Mother Earth. If you ever seen a sweat lodge, they're circular. They're built low to the earth, so you have to stoop down and crawl in. They're covered with blankets and tarps so no light can get in. They represent the original cosmic womb from which we all come. And many indigenous peoples on this continent engage in Inipi ceremony in these sweat lodges. Inipi is a Lakota word that means to live again. And in the Inipi ceremony, our Lakota friends use all four of these basic elements in ceremony to create new life. So think about what they're doing. These four elements that gave us life in the first place, they use them so we can be born again. Fire, representing the sun, perpetual light and life energy. Fire is used to heat the grandfathers, the stones. Earth, we have to respect and humble ourselves before Mother Earth to engage in Inipi. There's only one way to get into that lodge. Crawl on your hands and feet out of reverence for Mother Earth. Water. Water is used to release the heat from the grandfathers to create stone or to create steam in the lodge. And that steam helps us pray. It helps us pray because it puts our physical self in a bit of duress, so we have no option but to lean into our prayers for new life. And finally, air. That heat in a sweat lodge purifies the air. Most pathogens cannot survive in that kind of heat. So that air that we're breathing in is clean and pure. That air also transports to our bodies the healing herbs that are used in an Inipi ceremony. All of this, you come out of that dark womb and you emerge as a new human being through the power of these four elements. It's not entirely unlike Catholic baptism, in which priests used water, oil from the earth, and fire to purify the person being baptized, and that person is born again into the spirit. These four elements, earth, wind, fire and water, all recognized as essential to life and therefore sacred. We're going to explore all four of them a bit further, not only for how they cooperate to make life, but if we pay attention to how these elements bring about life, we can also learn a little bit about how to live. First, each element brings its unique gift to life. Of course, that fiery ball known as the sun in the sky gives us the very life energy. The earth gives us nutrients and minerals. Water is our circulation system. It helps us regulate our temperature, its metabolism, and it's the structure, the building block of our cells. And of course, air gives us breath, that gas exchange where we can release the CO2 that no longer serves us, and inhale life-giving oxygen. Now that's basic science about how these elements work to give us life, but all these elements give us many more gifts than that. The sun also gives us light, warmth, and in cooperation with the earth, the four seasons. The earth gives us a place to stand, a place to call home, a place to put down roots and build and grow and have structure about us. Water provides transportation. It disperses seeds. It disperses animals all over the planet. Air or wind does much the same. It's also a circulation system for our bodies and for the earth. It also distributes life in the form of seeds and animals all over the planet. And of course, on top of all these gifts, these four elements give us beauty, abundance, peace, wisdom, and the experience of awe. Next, these four elements can't do it on their own. They must cooperate to make life. No one element has all life-giving power. The most obvious example of this is something we all learn in grade school, science, photosynthesis, right? That life energy of the sun is not directly available to us as animals. I've tried. When I go hiking many times, I'll lay on a rock and I swear I'm photosynthesizing, but probably not. Right? But here's the thing. Those plants cannot take that energy from the sun and just directly use it. Those plants need the earth, the air, and the water to help them capture that energy from the sun. All four elements are cooperating in this process. You also notice that none of those four elements, when we look at them, appear to be alive. But somehow, the four together make living beings. The great Persian mystic and poet Rumi wrote this: earth, fire, water, and air, they all are as dead before man. But before the divine, they are living servants working at its command. God's intelligence takes things that appear lifeless to us and makes life with them. So each element has its unique gift. They must cooperate to make life. And finally, all four of those elements must be willing to undergo transformation in order to make life. The sun's energy is transformed through the process of photosynthesis, but it goes way beyond that. The sun's fire transforms water to vapor, which forms clouds, which spreads that finite resource water around the planet for use by all life, and we get to reuse it again and again and again, thanks to the power of the sun and the power of the wind. Fire transforms the earth by recycling nutrients and plants back into the soil. It also changes landscapes, and many plant seeds cannot open and germinate without fire. So those plants need fire and soil and water and air. Water transforms fire. Water and wind transform the earth. They carve canyons, erode cliffs, and shift sand dunes. The earth transforms water. When it sends up mountains, it changes the course of water. When earthquakes happen, waterways change their course. And of course, wind transforms water by giving it waves that act as transportation. It's all quite complicated. In fact, it's so complicated, I recently started thinking I have, in addition to why mosquitoes, when I transform or transition into the next plane of existence, I have a second question for God. Why is our energy source, the sun, 93 million miles away? I mean, right here we have earth, we have wind, we have water, but for some reason, it put our energy 93 million miles away. Now, we do have fire on this planet, which is transformative, but it's not the type of fire that can give us life. That's the sun. Add to this complication the fact that the phosphorus in rocks would still be trapped in rocks. The phosphorus we need for our bodies would be unavailable to us if it weren't for lightning that releases phosphorus from rocks into water so we can use it. Add to this the fact that some of those minerals that are in the earth that we need for our bodies started out as stars and fell here as stardust. This is rather a complicated system. And not only is it complicated, but it's really slow. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Our genus, Homo, has only been around 2 million years. Our species, Homo sapiens, only about 300,000 years. In fact, if you took the entire history of the Earth and condensed it into 1 year, humans would have arrived 3 seconds before midnight on December 31st. That's like a blink in a year. So here we are with all this philosophical ideas and intelligence, science, spiritual thinking throughout the ages. How do we bring it all together? Here, where we teach the science of mind, that's exactly what we try to do. We try to reconcile all these avenues of valuable information to get at truth. Because we're interested in truth wherever it might come from, whether it be philosophy or religion or science. All of this has been compiled into a theory of evolution, but probably a theory of evolution that's a little bit different than you learned in biology class, but does not ignore that science. We teach that evolution is a principle at work in the universe. And because it's a principle, that means it's everywhere, all the time, and always at work in everything, which means we don't only evolve physically, but also emotionally, spiritually, and intellectually. Our founder, Ernest Holmes, wrote, "Evolution is a process which, though invisible, finds manifestation in every form of life. It is the logical or necessary outcome of the universal intelligence of spirit. But evolution is an effect of intelligence and not its cause. Evolution is the time and process through which spirit unfolds." In other words, evolution is the process by which universal intelligence creates. Intelligence came first. This is the intelligence that brought forth all creation, that brought forth each and every one of us. This is the creative intelligence that works with earth, wind, fire, and water to create this magnificent planet that we get to live on. In the words of our friend Rumi, "Oh soul, the four elements are your face, water, wind, fire, and earth. Each one is a blessing." They are blessings, and in honor of that, our prayer today, we are going to pray as a community. We are going to pray in the Lakota tradition. We're going to pray in the seven directions. Catherine is going to help us with this. We will first pray in the four cardinal directions and then three additional directions. Some of you probably know what those are. And before we do this, I want to thank the Lakota elders that taught me to pray in this way. Uncle Luke, Uncle Homer, and Uncle Sylvan. I miss you, Uncle Sylvan. All right. I invite you to stand as you are able, and I invite those who join us in our virtual space to participate in this as well. I am going to lead us in the movements. Catherine will read the prayer for us. We will start facing west. I know many traditions start in the east, but I was taught to start in the west. So I also invite you in each direction to have a sort of open posture, perhaps your hands in order to receive the gifts of each direction. As Catherine reads this prayer, you'll notice west, west. Is this west? No, we start west. Which way is west? This way is west. This is west. I know most Native Americans start to the east, but my elders taught me west. So we're going to start with the west, okay? And that's west. And just notice as Catherine reads this prayer for us, how it honors the four elements of life. So we start in the west. Catherine, thank you.
To the west, the sun sets and the day ends, and the stars rise. Thus it is the direction of rest, of our dream lives, and of closure and endings that need to take place in order for there to be new beginnings. The great Thunderbird lives in the west and sends thunder and rain from its direction. Nothing can live without water, so the west is vital. We pray that we may be open to receive these gifts this day. A quarter turn to your right, to the north. North is the direction of the cold of winds of the winter season. These winds are cleansing. They cause the leaves to fall and the earth to rest under a blanket of snow. If someone has the ability to face these winds like the buffalo with its head into the storm, they have learned patience and endurance. This is the direction of strength, courage, fortitude, focus, clarity, and purpose. We pray that we may be open to receive these gifts this day. Quarter turn to your right, east. East is where the day begins. Light dawns in the morning and spreads over the earth. It is also the beginning of understanding, because light helps us see things the way they really are. On a deeper level, East stands for the wisdom that helps people live good lives. This is the direction of new beginnings, hope, promise, and potential. We pray that we may be open to receive these gifts this day. To your right, quarter, just the south. South. Feel the warm winds that come from the equator in the south, because the southern sky is when the sun is at its highest. This direction stands for warmth, growth, fertility, creativity, balance, and harmony. In addition, this direction represents faith, trust, and faithfulness in relationships. We pray that we may be open to receive these gifts this day. Now you can return looking towards me and Reverend Bridget. Platform. Sky. This is the direction of the Great Spirit and of Father Son, who gives vital life energy. Enlightenment also comes from this direction. We pray that we may be open to receive these gifts this day. Mother Earth. Great Mother Earth, she who supports us and provides all that we need. May we walk humbly on her back. We feel grounded, and we give thanks for Mother Earth and all that she provides. We pray that we may be open to receive the many gifts of Mother Earth this day. And within, we give thanks for ourselves, for all that we are, for that indwelling God. Here we find peace, guidance, and understanding. We pray that we may be open to receive the many gifts of our inner God self this day. Aho.
Aho.